to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. Once again, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith. Thank you for joining me here today. We have a fantastic episode of NXT to talk with you about today. I am very excited. I know you're excited. I don't know that, but I hope that, and you should be. And here we are. Now, as you know, generally, before we start reviewing the show itself, we'll go over the news and what's happening in wrestling. Now, as of yesterday, didn't really know what I was going to talk about. We had some sad things happen in the world of wrestling. We also had some interesting things happen, and I put it out to Twitter to see what you guys wanted to talk about. You can always hit me up on Twitter. I am Zach NXT. That's ZachNXT. I always take your questions and comments not only there, but sometimes it ends up on the show, like today, where a couple of my friends there suggested some topics to talk about. And the overwhelming sentiment is that people were a bit confused about this brand invitational that we're doing now for Raw and SmackDown. And the gist was that, I believe it was worded as, four times a year, a superstar from Raw or SmackDown can be invited onto the other brand. This started with Drew McIntyre inviting Baron Corbin onto Raw from SmackDown. Still not sure why, he just kind of did it because it's the brand invitational. And obviously we've seen Charlotte Flair on the main roster. She had two appearances on SmackDown, one to set up a match and then a match with Bayley. She was also on Raw in a number one contenders match. So, on the face of it, it seems like the brand invitational would be a good idea. First off, you generally aren't going to see people from Raw on SmackDown and vice versa. They try to stick to that, although they haven't done a very good job for the most part. And it allows for different matchups. Although Baron Corbin isn't the most interesting box office guy, he is a very good heel and it gives somebody for Drew McIntyre to work with. And as far as Charlotte Flair, I don't know, man. She just is there. She's just everywhere. At this point, it kind of seems like WWE is doing it because they know it bothers people. And sometimes they like to bother people. So that's what you want for one of your champions, is for them to just be a bother. Not a heel, just a bother. So, again, on the face of it, it seems like an interesting idea, right? You can have special circumstances for inviting people to your show. It can go for more feuds. You can have more possibilities. I think the problem is that, number one, that wording for the rules is very confusing. Four times a year, a superstar from Raw or SmackDown could be invited to the other brand. Now, if the wording of that rule is that you can only have somebody from SmackDown on Raw four times a year, we've already gotten real close to that limit. Charlotte has already been invited to SmackDown twice, if we're including NXT in that, which I assume we are. If the wording of the rule is that every superstar can be invited four times a year, i.e., for example, Baron Corbin being on Raw only takes up one of Baron Corbin's transfers. It doesn't take up one of SmackDown's. That makes more sense in terms of what we've already seen, but then that makes no sense because why would every superstar be able to go four times a year? That means just about every week you're going to have somebody on the show. And the other problem, I think, is that there's not a huge reason for somebody to be coming over to the different shows. There was no reason to have Charlotte go against Bayley or be in that number one contenders match. It was a good match between her and Nia and Natalya, but Nia ultimately won, and you could have done that either with let's say, Kairi Sane, who we would have had a story there, or you could have just done Nia and Natalya. They didn't do that. They used somebody else. For Raw, Baron Corbin going against Drew McIntyre was a good match, and it set up his feud going forward, but it didn't need to be Baron Corbin. And so that leads us to an interesting rift, or ripple rather, that somebody put into it and said, wouldn't this be a good opportunity for mid-carders? So instead of bringing Baron Corbin, maybe, for example, before he won the U.S. title, Apollo Crews could have moved over from one brand to another. I think that that would ultimately work if you were going to consistently do it. And let's say if you're going to have Apollo go from Raw to SmackDown for a week, if Apollo has a good showing. But knowing WWE the way that a lot of us do, I think that two things would happen. One, Apollo would go to SmackDown, and the reaction would be, oh, okay, why? And then Apollo would just lose, and your reaction would still be, oh, well, I mean, he lost, who cares? So if you were going to commit to having people get over as they go to the different shows, that would be one thing. But again, knowing WWE, that doesn't seem like something that they would do. It seems like they would be more interested in just having top stars move over. Because let's face it, ratings have been very, very low. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there is no crowd, and it's hard to watch wrestling without a crowd. Now, they fixed that a bit with Performance Center people on Raw. That helped a lot. And they also had the Performance Center people here on NXT, which I'll talk about, helps a lot as well. But I think that WWE thinks that the problem is that they need to have stars on the different shows, have different matchups. However, Baron Corbin on Raw and Charlotte Flair on SmackDown and Raw isn't going to increase ratings. Charlotte Flair on NXT hasn't increased the ratings. It's not done anything good for NXT as far as I can see. It's not Charlotte's fault. That's more the WWE's fault. And so here we are. We're in a situation where ratings are not very good, and you're going against the idea of the brand split which you established. So it doesn't seem to be anything but a lose-lose. But again, it could be very interesting if there were a reason that Drew McIntyre were calling Baron Corbin to Raw, then I don't think it would be a problem. If they had some kind of interaction on a pay-per-view that happened to be dual brand, let's say at WrestleMania they had some kind of interaction, then it would make sense that the only way for Drew McIntyre to get his hands on Baron Corbin, because he's not allowed on SmackDown, is either to get invited to SmackDown or to invite Baron Corbin to Raw. That's fine. It's the same way as when Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar were facing off at SummerSlam. They couldn't get their hands on each other. To my memory, it only happened once when Randy Orton snuck on to Raw to hit an RKO on Brock Lesnar. That was surprising, and it got a big reaction because they stuck to the brand split concept before that. We've stuck to the brand split concept for the most part this time around, but this invitational seems kind of convoluted in the way that they're doing it. And I think anything that's convoluted isn't going to result in anything more interesting or any more ratings. I think that you could stick with this brand invitational and take the advice of the same people that were mentioning me on Twitter and have different performers come through. Because it's not going to make a difference in ratings, you can use this opportunity to get a mid-carder over in this situation where you have limited performers and they have more of a chance to do something. So maybe you have Raw that's too full up, you have a few Zelina Vega segments, you have a lot going on SmackDown, you have a lot of Sonya Deville segments, they're making the absolute most of it, more than just about anybody. But maybe you take somebody from SmackDown, put them on Raw, give them a chance to go against Apollo, or put a tag team over there. That might be interesting. I also think we should probably clarify the rules, because I'm still confused whether NXT has used two of its transfers with Charlotte, or if Charlotte has used three of her transfers total by appearing on SmackDown twice and Raw once. And I think you have to realize that it's not really going to affect the ratings. I think short of Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker coming back and moving to one show or another on a special per night basis, I don't think you're going to have anything like that. So the only thing you can really do with this is to get stars over that you already have. One of the reasons that the ratings aren't good is because you haven't built a ton of stars as top talent. And a lot of the times what you'll have is you'll have somebody like The Fiend, who's the Universal Champion, and he turns around and he loses to Goldberg for no discernible reason. He loses to Goldberg, he goes on to face John Cena, and then Goldberg promptly goes to WrestleMania and loses it to Braun Strowman because Redacted is selfish and wanted to be with his family and we don't mention him. So there was no point in doing it. They just felt like because it was a foreign show that they were doing, they wanted to have something big, and that's why they had Goldberg win the title. Well, that's fine for that night, although I don't see how it helped anybody, including Goldberg. But going forward, it makes The Fiend feel lesser than by beating him, and it feels lesser than when you are going to continue to bring back big stars and just have them get over at the expense of other talent. In the Attitude Era, we very rarely had super-duper old stars come to the company and beat Stone Cold and The Rock. It just didn't happen. And that's why we remember, amongst other things, Stone Cold and The Rock as two of the best and once in a generation, maybe twice in a generation, wrestlers. So you have to go into it with a mindset of, you can use these older stars, but you need to use them in a capacity to put other people over. Because while Goldberg had those two matches, after those two matches, he's gone. The Fiend is here, Braun Strowman is here, Goldberg's gone. And so all you've done is you've put more heat on Goldberg, put more smoke on him, and then he disappears, so it feels like something is missing. So I don't know what we're trying to do, but that's what we've ended up doing. So, in short, yeah, Brand Split's an interesting idea, or rather Brand Invitational, but I don't know that it's being used to its full capacity yet, or it's anything like that. I think that we're still figuring it out. I think WWE is still figuring it out. Hopefully they can, and hopefully we can use it very sparingly, not every week, and we can use it for something that turns into a personal issue. If somebody from Raw is invited, then somebody from SmackDown is invited. You can invite them to multiple shows, apparently, so you might as well to further a story that's going to end up on a pay-per-view that has both brands on it. That's not what we're doing right now, and I think it's suffering for it, and I think that's why, because every time you have a brand split, they either have an invitational or where some stars can show up, or sometimes they just break it. And there's no point of a brand split if you're just going to not adhere to it. But hopefully they can work that out. In the meantime, I'm over here just worried about NXT. That's my bag. That's my brand. That's my show. That's the show that I host. And good news, we had a great show this week, and I'm very excited to recap it. This is one of the best shows that we've had in a while, actually. And no small part of that was shown in the intro, where we have Performance Center athletes in the crowd again, the same way we did on Raw. They're behind a, looks like a plastic barrier for safety purposes. They've all been tested and are doing social distancing, I believe they said. There's not a lot of people in the crowd, but the noise helps, and seeing a crowd and seeing people react really helps. A lot of wrestling is based on that reaction, and before this is why Raw and SmackDown and NXT felt lesser than, because it doesn't feel as important. That's why AEW felt more important, because they figured out weeks and weeks ago to have wrestlers and staff in the crowd. It makes it feel at least something like a wrestling show. And because NXT had Performance Center athletes this week, it felt like a wrestling show. Boy, oh boy, it's nice to have a wrestling show feel like a wrestling show. And we're getting started hot first. It's Drake Maverick coming out. He is the first out for the Group A final. It's Drake Maverick versus Jake Atlas versus Kushida, and the winner goes on to face Phantasma next week for the interim cruiserweight title. I believe it's Jordan Devlin that currently has the title but can't defend it, so whoever wins the interim title is presumably going to face Devlin. We have a recap of Drake Maverick beating Kushida last week. It's been a great story. Gross. But it's been a great story. but I really need him to win at this point. You've really gone all the way with this story so far. It would really be a shame if we did all this just for him to not win. And I don't think Phantasma particularly needs it. I think he'll be fine, whereas I think Drake will be fired. Gross. This should be the match of the night, and now that they actually let Drake wrestle, what do you know? He's showing what he can do and that he's a very good wrestler. And then Kushida's out next with his Back to the Future entrance, which always gives me goosebumps. It's so different and so cool and so nerdy, and that's why I love it. And with Kushida, it seems like they'll hopefully have more for him to do after this tournament because he's really, really good. He can definitely do more. The Cruiserweight title feels more important than it has right now because you're doing this tournament and you have the Drake Maverick story around it. But in general, the Cruiserweight title has not felt important and they haven't put a lot of steam behind it. Maybe it'll being in NXT will make it feel more important. Maybe if Drake Maverick holds it, it will because people's eyes are going to be on Drake Maverick. But I think you can do more with Kushida. I think you can put him in a championship match for the North American title, and I think that would be fantastic. I just feel like he can do more. And then Jake Atlas is next. He's a weird, stupid, generic dubstep theme that needs to be fixed immediately. Usually their music is on point for whoever's coming out. Jake Atlas, it most certainly is not on point. It's not on any point. It's not on any point at all. If Drake were not in this tournament, I think Jake Atlas would be the story and the standout. So that kind of sucks for him, because he's just kind of in the way of Drake Maverick winning. I don't know that they clearly didn't expect the reaction to Drake Maverick based on his Twitter video when he got released. And so now I think they're going further with Drake Maverick than they originally intended. And I don't know, it feels like Jake Atlas would have won this tournament if Drake Maverick weren't here. But goes to show you, it's not necessarily the best laid plans, it's the best laid story. So, here we are. Drake still has his left arm wrapped from his match with Kushida last week. I like that detail. And this is the point at which I wrote that having a crowd, even if it is small, is so much better. It makes this match feel more important. It feels like the guys and girls are working harder because they have feedback immediately. This match is great. If it weren't for the main event, this would have been the match of the night. It might still be. Kushida hits an O'Connor roll onto Jake Atlas and then hits a German suplex into a pin on Maverick. He almost gets the 3 count with that. I haven't seen that before, or at least in a long time. That was incredible. And this is a great triple threat match because they don't do that thing that triple threat matches usually do where someone is always outside of the ring for no discernible reason, except that you can't do a lot of three-way spots. But in this one, they're all in the ring basically at the same time the whole time. And Jake Atlas hits the apron DDT. It's actually called the Rainbow DDT on Maverick, but Kushida pulls him out of the ring. And that way, you don't just have one person outside the ring. Now Jake Atlas and Kushida are both outside the ring. So you actually have the one person left over that's inside the ring. I like that. We have Jake Atlas and Kushida are fighting on the top rope, and Maverick knocks Jake Atlas off, and Kushida locks the Sakuraba lock on, and then knocks Drake Maverick down. So Jake Atlas hits a Spanish fly off the top rope, and then, or rather, Kushida hits a Spanish fly onto Atlas, and he keeps the arm lock in. So Kushida has Atlas locked in the arm lock on one side of Atlas's body, and on the other side, Drake Maverick comes over and drapes his arm over Jake Atlas, and the ref counts 3. Kushida doesn't realize it. He gets up thinking that Jake Atlas tapped out, and it turns out that Drake Maverick won by pinfall. Because Kushida was on the other side of Atlas, he didn't see Drake doing the pinfall, and so he thought he won. It was an interesting finish. Keeps everyone relatively strong. I like it. And Phantasma comes out while Drake is right next to the Cruiserweight title, and Phantasma shakes Maverick's hand. They'll compete for the title. And Phantasma points the title, and Maverick says, it's not about that. It's about more than that for me. I'm fighting for my job. So, again, it's been a very good story, and we have our final of Phantasma versus Maverick. Again, at this point, it should be Maverick. It would sure would be a shame if he just lost in the finals and then was gone. That would suck. We still have the issue of the masked assailants that keep coming around. Didn't see them this week on the Hulu Cut, but we have the two people who are most tied into them with Phantasma. They always run away when Phantasma comes around. And with Maverick, because it's WWE and it doesn't seem like there's any chance that it is Maverick, that means that it is Maverick, which I'm fine with as well. It would make sense that if you're fighting for your job, you would try and even the playing field a bit by taking out some of your opponents. So I suspect that we might see an appearance for them next week. And I am fine with that. We cut to a title that says tonight, Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai are going to team against Flair and a mystery opponent, because at NXT In Your House, Flair will defend the NXT Women's title in a triple threat match. It's going to be against Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley. So we were right in thinking that it was going to be a triple threat. Hopefully one of them takes the title, because I'm about done with this story, and it feels like there's not a lot you can do, and it feels like they want Charlotte Flair back on the main roster anyway, based on the fact that they keep having her there, so let's just put her back on the main roster. We cut to Thatcher and Kurt Angle talking backstage. Kurt Angle's got his ref gear on, and they said it's going to be a fight pit. The only way to win is submission or knockout. I love it, because a lot of times in cage matches, it feels weird to have a babyface trying to escape the cage. That's a heel move. And with this, you have a cage constructed because it's a grudge match and these guys hate each other, and Riddle was an MMA fighter, but you don't have that issue of a babyface trying to escape the cage, which is generally a cowardly heel move. And I like that they have Kurt Angle talking to Thatcher, going over the rules like a real referee would. I like that. They cut to a replay of the end of the Cruiserweight title match, or Cruiserweight contenders match, and it shows that Jake Atlas actually tapped out after about the two count. And so, technically, Kushida would have won, not Drake Maverick. They say that the decision is going to stand, and Drake Maverick's interviewed. He says that he knows. He said he wanted to compete fairly. He says, I don't know if we need to have another match or what we need to do. Kushida comes in, and he says, you fight for the title. Just go win. And Drake Maverick calls Kushida back, and he says he has all the respect in the world for him. And he says, when I win the NXT Cruiserweight title, I want you to have the first shot. And they shake hands. That's interesting. I don't know if I love that Kushida was just cool with giving up the title shot. Feels like he would have been more mad about that. But if we're doing the story of Drake Maverick being the leader of these masked men, it makes sense that he would build this sympathy for himself and basically make the easiest road that he could into the Cruiserweight title. So I think if we have that swerve, which I think we will, I think that that'll be an interesting wrinkle to the story. So I think it'll be okay for storyline purposes, and you'll have an interesting match with Kushida and Drake Maverick regardless. And we're starting it. Rhea Ripley's out first. And Rhea Ripley's playing to the crowd. It feels like wrestling again. What do you know? And Tom Phillips says that Ripley has been single-minded at getting the title back ever since she lost it. And it occurs to me that's how it should be when a champion loses the title. A lot of times when a champion loses a title, they'll put them in another program right away. And it seems like they just forget about the title. Seems like they don't care about it anymore. And it would stand to reason that if you are a champion and lose it, you would be single-minded at getting right back in to that title match. And it makes sense because they abolished that automatic rematch a while ago, that you have to earn your way back, and you would be single-minded in trying to get that title back. That makes sense to me. And Io Shirai is out next. She has a great entrance as well. Everybody in this match has a great entrance except Charlotte Flair, because her music is terrible and it's just a dubstep remix of Ric Flair's thing, because I don't know if you guys know, she's Ric Flair's daughter. So that's not good, but the other ones are good. And Charlotte Flair's out next. She's been busy this week. She's been on SmackDown and Raw and NXT and so on and so forth. She's really the only traveling champion. When they did those women's tag titles, they set it up as if they were going to be moving from show to show to show. It's not really the case. It's really just Charlotte Flair that's moving from show to show to show. And commentary points out that Charlotte has been alienating everyone, so who's going to tag with her? And Beth Phoenix says, knowing from being in the locker room and having your ear to the ground that Flair has zero friends across the three brands. Dang. That's makes sense, but dang. And up next is her partner, and it's Chelsea Green. It's Chelsea Green, guys. Huh. She's out here with Robert Stone. Stone says, "How big is this team? And I did it." This is obviously an underwhelming choice. I like it for Chelsea Green, I suppose. I haven't seen her on the Hulu cut since the number one contender ladder match that Io won. So, I mean, it's TV time, I guess. On the other hand, Chelsea's been presented as somebody not to be taken seriously, so I don't know if the story is that she just had to find whoever she could find, or she had to find a sucker to come into the ring with her. But again, I guess it's good for Chelsea. She's in a big match with the two number one contenders and on the side of the champion, so whatever. And Rhea Ripley's going to start for her team, and Charlotte Flair makes Chelsea Green go first. The story is that Flair is scared of Shirai and Ripley, and she's just cheering on Chelsea Green from the apron. She only comes in when Shirai or Ripley are hurt. And it's a pretty good match. It's a lot of Chelsea Green being beaten up, and then Charlotte Flair coming in and taking advantage when somebody on Ripley Shirai is being beat up. So it's not the best match, but it's pretty good. And at the end, we have Io Shirai accidentally takes out Rhea Ripley on the apron, and Flair hits a quick roll-up with her feet on the ropes for the win. It's a good setup for their takeover in your house match. Generally, if you have a number one contender getting over on the champion a week or 2 weeks before, that's a sign that they're not winning. This is an interesting finish. You have kind of contempt between Flair and Shirai over the fact that Shirai just took Rhea Ripley out by accident, so they won't be able to coexist at the In Your House pay-per-view, so that's interesting. It's a good setup for their match. Like I said, not a great match, but it served the story, which is often what WWE is going for, so that's fine. And they said that TakeOver In Your House is actually coming up 1 week from Sunday, so it's actually just around the corner. It's closer than I remembered it being. So, I mean, that's going to be interesting. So we have essentially one more week of setup and then the TakeOver In Your House, so that should be interesting. Seems like we're going to have to get a few more matches on the card. Seems like we've been focusing on just a few, but we'll see what we get. And apparently, later, I don't know if it was just on social media, Chelsea Green fired Robert Stone. Number one, that feels like a mistake. Number two, it feels like you wasted my time with Chelsea Green and Robert Stone. Because the most interesting thing about Chelsea Green was Robert Stone. It at least made her a heel and gave her a mouthpiece. And so it feels weird that after one match that she didn't even win, she's firing Robert Stone. Because, it's really the only interesting thing about her. In the two matches I've had of hers, I mentioned Robert Stone doing things outside more than her because she doesn't have that connection with the audience yet. Or the viewer at home, in the case where there wasn't an audience. So, okay, sure, alright. So it's just Chelsea Green now. I'm sure that's going to go super-duper great. We cut to the back again, and Kurt Angle's talking to Matt Riddle. He's going over the rules silently again with him. He extends his hand, but then they fist bump, and that was adorable. And next we have William Regal and Adam Cole with their negotiations that we teased last week. And Adam Cole and Regal are talking on Zoom. That's a shame. This was the first week you had a crowd back, and you do this on Zoom. It feels less than. And people doing this on a Zoom call takes away from their ability to be performers as well. It just kind of makes everything feel less important. But here we are. And Cole is being antagonistic the whole time to William Regal. He says that Undisputed Era deserves a fair shot at the NXT titles. The attack titles, rather, they had to face a team that they didn't even know they were facing before. And Dream needs to stay away from me and my business. Regal says that he thinks Dream deserves another chance at the NXT title, and it'll probably be at In Your House. Cole says, where does all this charity come from for the Dream? And although he is a heel at this point, I agree with him. The Velveteen Dream just jumped in to attack Undisputed Era. He got himself an NXT title shot. And then he lost, though. So it feels odd that Adam Cole beat him and that is having to beat him again. It seems weird to give somebody a title shot, they lose, and then you give them another title shot. So in this case, I tend to agree with the heel. And I'm still not interested in Velveteen Dream Adam Cole. It might be more interesting in front of a crowd, maybe, but the last match was underwhelming. And so, as of right now, it's not an interesting story to me. Now, they may turn around and have a great match at TakeOver. They're going to have a crowd, so that'll help a lot. But right now, I don't know. This whole setup and them never really being in person, it's usually just Zoom calls or pre-recorded things or Dream calling out Cole when he's not even in the building. This build-up has made me a lot less interested in this match than I think of otherwise would have been. This match was announced on a Zoom call. So, I mean, how seriously am I supposed to take it, I guess? And Cole says, fine, but after I beat the Dream at In Your House, he never gets another shot at the title as long as I have it. And Regal agrees to that. So it will be Adam Cole versus the Velveteen Dream again. Yay. And then Regal says he'll find a location that shines the spotlight on both of them and that is worthy of the NXT Championship. And again, if Dream loses, he doesn't get another shot while Adam Cole has it. So that's interesting. It's an interesting setup. So if Dream loses, he can't challenge Adam Cole again, but it's not a Cody Rhodes situation where he can never challenge for the title again at all. So it leaves enough that you can see Dream winning because of that stipulation. You can also see Dream losing, and then once Adam Cole loses the title, getting another shot. Again, I am not particularly interested in this match, but it should be a good in-ring match with a crowd, hopefully. And it's going to feel weird if you put the title on Dream, but I don't know. Maybe you want to do something with Adam Cole on the main roster? I don't know, but we'll see. And Leon Ruff, the enhancement talent extraordinaire, is in the ring again after being beaten down by Karrion Kross last week. This week, Ciampa is out to get ready for his In Your House match against Kross. And as Ciampa's making his entrance, just about as he gets to the apron, Scarlett comes out by herself. And she's just walking down the ramp, just kind of staring at Ciampa and watching the match as Ciampa is making his entrance. And during the match, Ciampa's distracted by Scarlett. He keeps looking over at her. So Leon Ruff gets a little bit of offense in, but then Ciampa beats him down and he goes to hit the fairy tale ending. He blows a kiss to Scarlett before he hits it, hits the fairy tale ending, and he wins. And Scarlett just stares at him. She turns around and starts walking away and keeps staring down Ciampa. And then Cross comes on the Titantron with the camera a little bit too close on his face. It was mostly just his eye. And congratulates Ciampa. He says, I agree with you. You are special. And NXT TakeOver, that's special. But I promise you, on June 7th, I'm going to make you feel something you haven't felt in your life. Tick tock. He cuts out. Scarlett just smiles from the ramp, continues to stare down Ciampa, and walks to the back. That should be a very good match. And obviously, you expect Cross to win, but it can really put him over. There's only so much that you can do with enhancement talent matches for somebody before you need to have a big match that somebody has to go through something to win. Although I expect Ciampa to lose, I do not expect Ciampa to go down like an enhancement talent. I expect it to end up being a beatdown, but Ciampa's going to have a little bit to say about it first, and it should display Cross's ability in the ring and put him over as more of a monster than it otherwise would have against. Leon Ruff is very good in the ring, but he's not taken seriously because you haven't seen him before. Ciampa has been a champion before. If he runs through Ciampa, that's a former NXT champion. That's the guy who was the face of NXT. So that should be an interesting juxtaposition, and it should get Karrion Kross over even more than he already is. And next, we have Thatcher versus Riddle in a fight pit with Kurt Angle as the special guest referee. That's a hell of a sentence to be able to say. And the fight pit itself looks really cool. It doesn't look like anything I've seen before. Kind of looks like the War Game setup mixed with a steel cage. It's essentially a steel cage with a platform at the top, and the cage is closer to the ring, it feels like. And it looks like a fight pit. That's a good name for it. It looks like a fight pit. And so Kurt Angle comes out first, and seeing Kurt Angle in NXT with a small crowd is very special. Haven't seen Kurt Angle in a while, and it gives him the opportunity to be in the ring, although he can't compete in the ring anymore, and you probably wouldn't want to see that. It gives him something to do, and it makes it feel more important that he's the special guest referee. We have a recap of the Thatcher-Riddle feud thus far. They were a good tag team while they were doing it, although it didn't last very long. Still prefer Riddle and Pete Dunne, but it occurs to me that there's been rumors that Matt Riddle's going to be going to SmackDown. And so that obviously plays into this match and the fact that he's in this feud with Thatcher, who's going to be going forward on NXT. Just occurred to me that when Pete Dunne does come back, if he comes back to NXT, he's not going to have a tag team partner anymore. That's going to be odd for him because you would think the story would be he would want to get those tag team titles back. So he either is going to be coming back as a singles competitor, which I would prefer anyway. You have two good singles competitors. Or he's going to end up on SmackDown with Matt Riddle as a tag team, which I don't think you need either. I don't think that they're such an ingrained team that they would automatically come back as tag team partners. It feels like they're just going to bring Pete Dunne back to NXT and just not mention it. But it's a little bit odd for Pete Dunne. He passed off another tag team partner to Matt Riddle when he couldn't be there. And then that tag team partner beat down Matt Riddle and attacked him several times. And then Pete Dunne's going to come back and Matt Riddle's just not going to be there anymore. So good job, Pete Dunne. You literally kicked Matt Riddle out of NXT. Good job on that. And so, again, we recap the feud thus far. This already feels like a big main event. We've had a few main events on NXT that haven't felt that way. And between the crowd and the fact that the fight pit's different from what I've seen or the two competitors in the story, this feels like it could be on a takeover. This feels like a takeover quality main event. Thatcher is out first of the two. I would say he looks particularly pissed off today, but that's really just his face all the time, so it's not really any different. There's an outside referee who checks both competitors, and they're doing a tail of the tape. It's a great couple touches. It feels like a fight, not a match. And that's important because these two, it's a grudge match, but they're fighters, and it feels like a fight as opposed to just an angle. And Thatcher goes to the top of the fight pit on that platform. Riddle comes out. He's doing his normal kind of laid-back bro persona, but when he gets checked and he goes to the top of the fight pit, he gets serious. And again, the serious, pissed-off Matt Riddle is always my favorite Matt Riddle. And so hopefully when he does go to SmackDown, if that is what happens, he gets more of that, and he's not just treated like a complete comedy character that I'm scared he will be treated like, but we'll see. And with the cage, they both jump down into the fight pit, and with the cage, the ring feels very tight and almost suffocating, and that's a good touch because it feels more suffocating than, say, a regular cage match or a Hell in a Cell, which are usually bigger. This feels smaller and tighter, and so it feels like they're really locked in there and there is no escape, which there isn't, so it should feel like that. But it's a good touch that it feels like you're both very much stuck in here. I like that little detail. And so they drop down into the cage and we begin. Every hit is very hard in this match. These two clearly said beforehand, we don't want to be able to see through these punches and kicks, and let's get this done. And at some point early, Riddle jumps from the cage and hits Thatcher with a knee. And they're deciding knockouts by a 10 count. And so Kurt Angle starts counting, and Thatcher's up by 8, but his mouth is bleeding. So I guess he chewed down on a blood pack or something. His mouth is bleeding, and then he spits out, looks like, two teeth, which is a hell of a way to start kicking out two teeth. Because I'm going to tell you, if I'm in a fight and I get two teeth kicked out, I'm done. I'm done this week. I'm done for like a couple months. If you knock out a couple of my teeth, not only am I not fighting you, I'm not fighting you again, and I'm going home because this is ridiculous. And so Kurt Angle puts the gloves on that they have to put on when somebody's bleeding, And Thatcher goes over to the doctor, who's basically just shining a light in Thatcher's face. This is an angle that they did in the match, but it's funny that the doctor's basically just shining a light more at his nose than his mouth. And doctor says, looks like he can fight. Are you good to go? And Thatcher says he's fine. And Angle's just holding those two teeth. And it occurs to me that Mauro Ranallo is great for calling something like this because it is a fight and he's a big fight announcer. That really helps kind of get across everything that you're trying to get across here with it being very serious and it being a grudge match and somebody might get hurt. And he's always very excited to be calling a wrestling match. That helps too with it being a main event. And so Thatcher and Riddle end up on the top platform of the fight cage. At this point, I wrote that someone's getting off that throne, off that cage platform. If I know wrestling like I think I know wrestling, somebody's going off of that platform. And what do you know? Riddle hits the ripcord knee, and Thatcher safely falls into the pit, which I don't have a problem with. That's how I would fall into it, too. And then Riddle jumps from the platform and hits the floating bro to Thatcher. I knew it. If there's a platform in wrestling, somebody's going off that platform. And I assumed it would be Matt Riddle that went off that platform. And they get a "This is awesome" chant from the crowd. Number one, yes, it is awesome. And number two, boy, oh boy, I miss that chant. A lot of people complain about it. They think people just kind of do it to do it. I always disagreed with that because you don't hear it in every single match. And especially the fact that you haven't heard it in quite a while. And it happened during this match, which very much deserves it. These guys are working very hard, and I'm sure neither of them felt good after this. They definitely deserved it. And so Thatcher puts on a sleeper hold, and Riddle hits him against the cage and backdrops him. It knocks Thatcher off for a second, but then Thatcher locks the sleeper back on, and Riddle passes out. Thatcher is a made man. Thatcher is celebrating, and Mauro says Thatcher's demeanor is that of someone who was woken out of bed in a bad mood. Yeah, that's about right. And so Riddle is just coming to as Thatcher is standing tall on top of the fight pit, and Riddle looks beaten down and defeated, and Riddle is on to SmackDown. A lot of rumors that Riddle's going to be on SmackDown now. I don't know why they're calling him up now as opposed to any other time, but I'm excited and worried, because on one hand, I'm excited to see him get to be on the main roster, but on the other hand, I can see WWE thinking of him as just a comedy character. And while that is part of what he does, he's not just a comedy character. He's a laid-back guy who, when he gets into a fighting situation, turns very serious, and he's a legit MMA fighter that now wrestles, and he's a bad dude. My concern with the main roster is that they'll only see the comedic part of him, and then they're just going to see a guy who doesn't wrestle with shoes and is a stoner and says bro a lot, and they're just going to have him doing backstage segments like they had the Street Profits do. And he can do more than that, just like the Street Profits can. And they've shown that. And hopefully on the main roster, Matt Riddle is given the chance to show it. They're a little short on talent who can perform right now, so that would make sense. So he's a lot of people to work with over there. Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles. He has Baron Corbin to work with. He has a lot of people to work with, so hopefully they give him the chance to actually do it. But we'll see. So that's the last, presumably, we're going to see of Matt Riddle on NXT. He passes that heat over to Thatcher, who's now a singles competitor who just took out somebody who was a very big star on NXT. I don't know what we're going to do going forward with Thatcher, if we're going to go right into a title program. That would make sense. You certainly could. I don't know if you want to put him against, say, a Keith Lee or somebody. If Lee is also going to the main roster, that could be somebody that could take it off of him. I don't know. We will see. But like I said, this was an excellent episode of NXT. A lot of it had to do with the fact that there's a crowd now. Although it is small, it makes a huge difference in it appearing important and it appearing like an actual wrestling show as opposed to just an exhibition that they're putting on in the performance center they happen to set up a camera for. You had a lot of storylines being furthered. Drake Maverick is still alive in the Cruiserweight tournament. Those finals are next week. Presumably next week we'll also get Adam Cole and Velveteen Dream in some capacity. If it follows with the feud that's been going so far, it'll be Dream showing up to the building calling out Adam Cole, who just shows up on video making Dream look like an idiot. And then they'll have a match at TakeOver. We furthered the Ciampa Karrion Kross segment. It was interesting that they didn't use Kross on the physical show. They just had Scarlett come out, which almost felt more intimidating, that she's essentially just scouting and just reminding him that, you know, you can go through this Leon Ruff, but a week from Sunday, you're going to have to deal with a monster. And that felt very intimidating. You had the triple threat for the NXT Women's title set up well. Io Shirai was pinned, but she was pinned with Charlotte Flair putting her feet on the ropes, on the second rope, and you set up that title match really well. All three of them have motivations for winning or keeping the title, so that feels important. Hopefully Rhea Ripley or Io Shirai, I don't even care, one of them wins. We could move forward and put Charlotte Flair back on the main roster where they clearly want her. You set up Thatcher and Riddle very well. Thatcher beat Riddle, got his heat back from that quick roll-up. Last week, it felt like a big fight. I hope that they use that fight pit sparingly, but I hope that they do use it again because it's really good for grudge matches. It's kind of the NXT version of a steel cage or maybe a Hell in a Cell, where you can use it to settle big personal issues and you don't have a babyface coming to try and climb out of a cage and making themselves look like a heel. And so you have Thatcher going forward. At TakeOver, you're also going to have Damian Priest and Finn Balor facing off. That should be an excellent match. It looks like we're going to have us a pretty good TakeOver coming up a week from Sunday. It kind of snuck up on me. I forgot that it was so soon. But I'm very excited, and I hope you're very excited. And I hope that you enjoyed this week of the NXT podcast. Once again, I want to give a shout out to DJ Kuzmo and all my friends on Twitter who helped me come up with the news segment this week and gave me a little bit to talk about at the beginning. If you want to join in on the conversation, I am Zach NXT. That's ZachNXT. We're always on there talking about wrestling or talking about what's going on in the world, having a few laughs along the way. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to hear on the show, let me know over there. Otherwise, for this week, I've been Zachary Smith. You've been great. Thanks for listening.